Chapter 101. In which the travelers move homeward, and encounter some distinguished characters upon the way. Among the passengers on board the steamboat, there was a faint gentleman sitting on a low camp stool, with his legs on a high barrel of flour, as if he were looking at the prospect with his ankles, who attracted their attention speedily. He had straight black hair, parted up the middle of his head and hanging down upon his coat, a little fringe of hair upon his chin, wore no neckcloth, a white hat, a suit of black, long in the sleeves and short in the legs, soiled brown stockings and laced shoes. His complexion, naturally muddy, was rendered muddier by too strict an economy of soap and water, and the same observation will apply to the washable part of his attire, which he might have changed with comfort to himself and gratification to his friends. He was about 35, was crushed and jammed up in a heap, under the shade of a large green cotton umbrella, and ruminated over his tobacco plug like a cow. He was not singular, to be sure, in these respects, for every gentleman on board appeared to have had a difference with his laundress, and to have left off washing himself in early youth. Every gentleman, too, was perfectly stopped up with tight plugging, and was dislocated in the greater part of his joints. But about this gentleman there was a peculiar air of sagacity and wisdom, which convinced Martin that he was no common character, and this turned out to be the case. "How do you do, sir?" apostrophe apostrophe said a voice in Martin's ear. "How do you do, sir?" apostrophe apostrophe said Martin. It was a tall, thin gentleman who spoke to him, with a carpet cap on, and a long, loose coat of green baize, ornamented about the pockets with black velvet. "You are from Europe, sir?" apostrophe apostrophe, "I am," apostrophe said Martin. "You are fortunate, sir," apostrophe, Martin thought so too. But he soon discovered that the gentleman and he attached different meanings to this remark. "You are fortunate, sir, in having an opportunity of beholding our Elijah Pogram, sir," apostrophe, "your Elijah Pogram," apostrophe, apostrophe said Martin, thinking it was all one word, and a building of some sort. "Yes, sir," apostrophe, Martin tried to look as if he understood him, but he couldn't make it out. "Yes, sir," apostrophe repeated the gentleman. "Our Elijah Pogram, sir, is, at this minute, identically setting by the Engine Biler," apostrophe, the gentleman under the umbrella put his right forefinger to his eyebrow, as if he were revolving schemes of state. "That is Elijah Pogram, is it?" apostrophe, apostrophe said Martin. "Yes, sir," apostrophe replied the other. "That is Elijah Pogram." "Apostrophe, dear me," apostrophe, apostrophe said Martin. "I am astonished," apostrophe, but he had not the least idea who this Elijah Pogram was, having never heard the name in all his life. "If the biler of this vessel was tow bust, sir," apostrophe said his new acquaintance, "and tow bust now, this would be a festival day in the calendar of despotism, pretty nigh equalin', sir, in its effects upon the human race, our 4th of glorious July." "Yes, sir, that is the Honorable Elijah Pogram, Member of Congress, one of the masterminds of our country, sir. There is a brow, sir, there," apostrophe, "quite remarkable," apostrophe said Martin. "Yes, sir. Our own immortal Chiggle, sir, is said to have observed, when he made the celebrated Pogram statter in marble, which rose so much contest and prejudice in Europe, that the brow was more than mortal. This was before the Pogram defiance, and was, therefore, a prediction, cruel smart." Apostrophe, "What is the Pogram defiance?" apostrophe, apostrophe asked Martin, thinking, perhaps, it was the sign of a public house. "An oration, sir," apostrophe returned his friend. "Oh, to be sure," apostrophe cried Martin. "What am I thinking of? It defied apostrophe, it defied the world, sir," apostrophe said the other, gravely. "Defied the world in general to compete with our country upon any hook, and developed our internal resources for making war upon the universal earth. He would like to know Elijah Pogrom, sir? Apostrophe, if you please, apostrophe said Martin. Mr. Pogrom, apostrophe said the stranger. Mr. Pogrom, having overheard every word of the dialogue, this is a gentleman from Europe, sir. From England, sir. But generous enemies may meet upon the neutral soil of private life, I think. Apostrophe, the languid Mr. Pogrom shook hands with Martin, like a clockwork figure that was just running down. But he made amends by chewing like one that was just wound up. Mr. Pogrom, apostrophe said the introducer, is a public servant, sir. When Congress is recessed, he makes himself acquainted with those free United States, of which he is the gifted son. Apostrophe, it occurred to Martin that if the Honorable Elijah Pogrom had stayed at home and sent his shoes upon a tour, they would have answered the same purpose, for they were the only part of him in a situation to see anything. In course of time, however, Mr. Pogrom rose, and having ejected certain plugging consequences which would have impeded his articulation, took up a position where there was something to lean against, and began to talk to Martin, shading himself with the green umbrella all the time. As he began with the words, how do you like? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Martin took him up and said. The country, I presume? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, sir, apostrophe said Elijah Pogrom. A knot of passengers gathered round to hear what followed, and Martin heard his friend say, as he whispered to another friend, and rubbed his hands, Pogrom will smash him into sky blue fits, I know. Apostrophe, apostrophe, why, apostrophe said Martin, after a moment's hesitation, I have learned by experience that you take an unfair advantage of a stranger when you ask that question. You don't mean it to be answered, except in one way. Now, I don't choose to answer it in that way, for I cannot honestly answer it in that way. And therefore, I would rather not answer it at all. Apostrophe, but Mr. Pogrom was going to make a great speech in the next session about foreign relations, and was going to write strong articles on the subject. And as he greatly favored the free and independent custom, a very harmless and agreeable one, of procuring information of any sort in any kind of confidence, and afterwards perverting it publicly in any manner that happened to suit him, he had determined to get at Martin's opinion somehow or other. For if he could have got nothing out of him, he would have had to invent it for him, and that would have been laborious. He made a mental note of his answer, and went in again. You are from Eden, sir? How did you like Eden? Apostrophe, Martin said what he thought of that part of the country, in pretty strong terms. It is strange, apostrophe said Pogrom, looking round upon the group, this hatred of our country, and her institutions. This national antipathy is deeply rooted in the British mind. Apostrophe, apostrophe, good heaven, sir, apostrophe cried Martin. Is the Eden Land Corporation, with Mr. Scatter at its head, and all the misery it has worked, at its door, an institution of America? A part of any form of government that ever was known or heard of? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I consider the cause of this to be, apostrophe said Pogrom, looking round again, and taking himself up where Martin had interrupted him, partly jealousy and prejudice, and partly the natural unfitness of the British people to appreciate the exalted institutions of our native land. I expect, sir, apostrophe turning to Martin again, that a gentleman named Jollop happened in upon you during your location in the town of Eden? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, apostrophe answered Martin, but my friend can answer this better than I can, for I was very ill at the time. Mark. The gentleman is speaking of Mr. Jollop. Apostrophe, oh. Yes, sir. Yes. I see him, apostrophe observed Mark. A splendid example of our native raw material, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe said Pogrom, interrogatively. Indeed, sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe cried Mark. The Honorable Elijah Pogrom glanced at his friends, as though he would have said, observe this. See what follows. apostrophe and they rendered tribute to the pogrom genius by a gentle murmur. Our fellow countryman is a model of a man, quite fresh from Nader's mold. Apostrophe apostrophe said pogrom, with enthusiasm. He is a true-born child of this free hemisphere. Verdant as the mountains of our country, bright and flowing as our mineral licks, unspoiled by withering conventionalities as e'er our broad and boundless barriers. Rough he may be, so e'er our bars. Wild he may be, so e'er our bufflers. But he is a child of Nader, and a child of freedom, and his boastful answer to the despot and the tyrant is, that his bright home is in the setting Sunday apostrophe, part of this referred to Chollop, and part to a western postmaster, who, being a public defaulter not very long before, a character, not at all uncommon in America, had been removed from office, and on whose behalf Mr. Pogrom, he voted for Pogrom, had thundered the last sentence from his seat in Congress, at the head of an unpopular president. It told brilliantly, for the bystanders were delighted, and one of them said to Martin, that he guessed he had now seen something of the eloquential aspect of our country, and was jawed up pretty small. Apostrophe, Mr. Pogrom waited until his hearers were calm again, before he said to Mark, you do not seem to coincide, sir. Apostrophe apostrophe, why, apostrophe said Mark, I didn't like him much, and that's the truth, sir. I thought he was a bully, and I didn't admire his carrying the murderous little persuaders, and being so ready to use them. Apostrophe, it's singular. Apostrophe apostrophe said Pogrom, lifting his umbrella high enough to look all round from under it. It's strange. You observe the settled opposition to our institutions which pervades the British mind. Apostrophe apostrophe, what an extraordinary people you are. Apostrophe apostrophe cried Martin. Are Mr. Chollop and the class he represents, an institution here? Are pistols with revolving barrels, sword sticks, bowie knives, and such things, institutions on which you pride yourselves? Are bloody duels, brutal combats, savage assaults, shooting down and stabbing in the streets, your institutions? Why, I shall hear next, that dishonor and fraud are among the institutions of the Great Republic. Apostrophe apostrophe, the moment the words passed his lips, the Honorable Elijah Pogrom looked round again. This morbid hatred of our institutions, apostrophe he observed, is quite a study for the psychological observer. He's alluding to repudiation now. Apostrophe apostrophe, oh, you may make anything an institution if you like, apostrophe said Martin, laughing, and I confess you had me there, for you certainly have made that one. But the greater part of these things are one institution with us, and we call it by the generic name of Old Bailey. Apostrophe apostrophe, the bell being rung for dinner at this moment, everybody ran away into the cabin, whither the Honorable Elijah Pogrom fled with such precipitation, that he forgot his umbrella was up, and fixed it so tightly in the cabin door, that it could neither be let down nor got out. For a minute or so this accident created a perfect rebellion among the hungry passengers behind, who, seeing the dishes, and hearing the knives and forks at work, well knew what would happen, unless they got there instantly, and were nearly mad, while several virtuous citizens at the table were in deadly peril of choking themselves in their unnatural efforts to get rid of all the meat before these others came. They carried the umbrella by storm, however, and rushed in at the breach. The Honorable Elijah Pogrom and Martin found themselves, after a severe struggle, side by side, as they might have come together in the pit of a London theater, and for 4 whole minutes afterwards, Pogrom was snapping up great blocks of everything he could get hold of, like a raven. When he had taken this unusually protracted dinner, he began to talk to Martin, and begged him not to have the least delicacy in speaking with perfect freedom to him, for he was a calm philosopher. Which Martin was extremely glad to hear, for he had begun to speculate on Elijah being a disciple of that other school of Republican philosophy, whose noble sentiments are carved with knives upon a pupil's body, and written, not with pen and ink, but tar and feathers. What do you think of my countrymen who are present, sir? Inquired Elijah Pogrom. Oh, very pleasant, said Martin. They were a very pleasant party. No man had spoken a word. Everyone had been intent, as usual, on his own private gorging, and the greater part of the company were decidedly dirty feeders. The Honorable Elijah Pogrom looked at Martin, as if he thought you don't mean that, I know. And he was soon confirmed in this opinion. Sitting opposite to them was a gentleman in a high state of tobacco, who wore quite a little beard, composed of the overflowing of that weed, as they had dried about his mouth and chin, so common an ornament that it would scarcely have attracted Martin's observation, but that this good citizen, burning to assert his equality against all comers, sucked his knife for some moments, and made a cut with it at the butter, just as Martin was in the act of taking some. There was a juiciness about the deed that might have sickened a scavenger. When Elijah Pogrom, to whom this was an everyday incident, saw that Martin put the plate away and took no butter, he was quite delighted, and said, "Well, the morbid hatred of you British to the institutions of our Gutenberg edition." End of chapter.